was saying earlier, it feels like the election was a month ago. It was just on Monday? Really? Okay. Welcome to our Friday show. It's the October 25th edition of the Sheldon McLeod Show, News 95.7. Matt Brand is our producer. We're going to check in with Lenore Zan, elected this week federally in Cumberland, Colchester. We're going to talk a little bit about that. And we're going to talk to Todd the Beer Dude. Because, of course, it is Friday and all. We'll also be chatting to Jay Bruce. He wrote a rather touching piece in this week's edition of The Coast on being a victim of domestic abuse, the lack of supports for single dads in Halifax, and how he's trying to help. We'll tell you more with Jay Bruce a little bit later on in the program. We're also reaching out to folks involved with a fundraiser for Eastern Front Theatre, Old Time Radio Hour. Jamie Bradley will be joining the conversation a little bit later. We'll also hear from Stephen Beaumont and Christine Sismondo. They are co-authors of a book called Canadian Spirits, the Essential Cross Canada Guide to Distilleries. Craft distilleries are certainly catching on as very popular, along with craft breweries. We'll talk about that. We'll hear from Ryan Cook and Sonny Akers, and we'll remember the UNICEF Christmas or Halloween campaign. You remember the little boxes that the kids used to take door to door with them? We'll talk a little bit more about how they've adapted this Halloween campaign. But right now, as we've been listening to the news throughout today, the Nova Scotia Liberal government is poised to push through legislation that would mean the province's striking Crown attorneys would be returned to work by next week. There was an injunction hearing that was supposed to be taking place this morning. In the end, it was withdrawn. The lawyers for the government said it was no longer an emergency, in fact, because this legislation was moving forward. Well, yesterday afternoon, we spoke with opposition leader Tim Houston, and a little later in the day, I had a request for a chance for the Premier to respond, and Premier Stephen McNeil is our guest this afternoon. Premier McNeil, thank you very much for doing this.
No problem. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm doing all right. This morning, some of the judges, in fact, the judge in this injunction said it was regrettable, this whole emergency injunction this morning. So again, this was withdrawn. Why?
Well, we were hoping the court would have heard this yesterday. The fact that they're hearing it today, the bill will be passing through the House today at third reading. As a matter of fact, we're in the final stages of the bill being passed today, so it wasn't requiring the court to actually intercede. We'd hoped they would have done that yesterday, and Crown attorneys would have been working today.
We've heard language from the representatives of the Crown attorneys who say they felt that, their former contract was not being honored. That's why they were walking out. That's why they went on strike.
Either way, it's an illegal strike in our view. Their terms are suggesting that the framework inside is breached, and that if that's the case, if there's no framework, they're like every other public servant. It means you have to go to work. And that's what this is about. Obviously, they have a different view. But the reality of it is there's a 17% pay raise. It's just simply not sustainable for the taxpayers of the province.
Premier Stephen McNeil, our guest on the broadcast this afternoon. The numbers that we're seeing, the representatives of Crown attorneys say starting entry level, $65,000. That's at the low end of the scale for this country. The provincial government says that this deal would mean they'd be what, making $150,000?
No, not at all. What we're saying is they raised that issue. So we went in originally to the bargaining table looking for the same deal that we have across our entire public sector, which is a 7% over 4 years. The Crown's brought a 17% to the table. They raised the issue of particularly starting salaries for Crowns. So we agreed, again, at the table, over and above the 7%, that we would make a 4% adjustment in the pay scales, which means a starting Crown, who today was making $65,000, the new starting salary would have been $81,000 on the day they signed that agreement. That's a $16,000 increase to address the very issue that they say is there. We did that through the entire step system pay scale. That 66% of Crowns would have seen an immediate increase over and above the 7% piece to address the very thing that that you're referring to that they suggested is there. That was at the bargaining table. That was a compromise. That's something we did. They continued to stay at 17% and wanted to go directly to arbitration.
But the collective agreement would have allowed that.
The collective agreement would have allowed open and free collective agreement. It doesn't mean you walk in and say, we're going to get 70% no movement and we want to go directly to arbitration. That's not negotiating. That's holding the taxpayer hostage. And the taxpayer can't afford a 17% pay raise across the public sector.
We've got Premier Stephen McNeil here with us this afternoon. Again, his office reached out after we had Tim Houston on our show yesterday, and I don't know if you heard what Tim Houston had to say. I want to play you some of that conversation from yesterday afternoon, Premier. We're just trying to get that geared up here. And unfortunately, it doesn't sound like we're able to do that. He was, in some ways, saying that you were incompetent in negotiating the contract with the previous Crown, the previous contract, and that he would have honored the agreement.
So he would have provided a 17 pay raise for Crowns and across the public sector. That is simply not sustainable. It's shocking to me that anyone who aspires to be the premier of the province would suggest that we could have 17% pay increases and still provide the services to the other 70% of Nova Scotians who don't have any benefits, who don't, not only do they not have that kind of an increase in their salary, they don't even have pension plans or health benefits. It's really shocking to me that anyone who aspires to be the leader, a leader of a particular province, would even come close to suggesting that.
Would it, in fact, though, be negotiating if you pass a piece of legislation that orders a group of employees back to work, though?
It actually doesn't. The contract, the piece of legislation doesn't force an agreement. The piece of legislation as provides them with another option besides letting an arbitrator determine. If they still are unhappy with what government does, they can go through an illegal strike. There's a process you would follow. You have to give 7 days notice. You go through the impaired like you would in normal. But they need to put in place essential service legislation. So it means serious crimes. They would have to prosecute those. That's the reality. And we want them back at the bargaining table. This bill does not force an agreement. There's a misnomer out there that this bill is going to force what we have on the table. That is not at all the case. And it's shocking to me that members of the legislature who are picking sides here based on for political reasons do not recognize that we need to be, we have a vibrant economy. We've seen positive signs economically. We need to make sure that we can continue to provide opportunity for all Nova Scotians, not just those who are fortunate enough to work in government.
Stephen McNeil, the Premier of Nova Scotia, is here with us. You've been consistent in saying that arbitrators do not take into account the ability for government to pay. If, in fact, though, the contract did allow for arbitration and the Crown attorneys wanted 17%, there's no guarantee it would come in at that number.
The reality of it is the 17% is such a gap that there's no way a government, a responsible government to the taxpayer of this province, could allow and take the risk of that. It's not like we were, 7 and 10%. It's not like we were 7 and they were 10. They were 17. That alone across the public sector, and I appreciate your comments about I've been consistent. I treated every public sector worker the same when it came to increases. We provided the same increase across the entire public sector. 1% increase is $50 million. $50 million. The 17% increase across the entire public sector is over $500 million in wages alone. How is that sustainable? How do we grow an economy? How do we let the private sector create good jobs, economic opportunity? Do you know we have more young people choosing to live and work in our province? Our population is all-time high. Wages are leading the country in this province. We have seen record amounts of investment by private sector. And somehow, because people are used to only complaining about something, and being negative as the opposition continues to do, and I get it, they want to hold us to account, but you cannot hold the taxpayer hostage because you're afraid of having a tough conversation at the bargaining table. We've tried that before. The recipe wasn't positive for the economy of Nova Scotia. The fact of the matter is, if Mr. Houston or Mr. Burrell does not like the position of our government, they spend a lot of time criticizing our position. What would they do? A 17% increase? good luck with this for the taxpayer of this province if that's where we're headed.
Premier Stephen McNeil, our guest. Teachers Union, others, including the Crown Attorneys, have said the law is unconstitutional. They want to see this challenged. And in fact, Paul Wozni on my show last week said that if there is a judgment in the future, that he hopes that there's some recognition that it would not mean a real surplus, or the surplus that your government had posted is not entirely real. It's obviously a hypothetical, but there was money spent to put forward an injunction today. That money that will not go back into the coffers of government. I'm just curious if in fact costs are offered or awarded by the courts for this injunction today. Do you have any sense as to how much that might be?
To my knowledge, that was not the case, but the reality of it is you can't be held hostage because you're afraid that someone's going to take you to court. My job is not just to represent, as Mr. Wozni, a certain segment of our population. My job is to represent every Nova Scotian, every taxpayer, every four-year-old, every child in this province. My job is to ensure that I think about each and every one of them when I go to the bargaining table. So I have to make sure who's going to pay that bill, because I'm only one taxpayer. All of your other listeners pay taxes too. Mm-hmm. And it'll be, they're the ones that's going to have to pay the bill. There's some idea that the more money government spends, the greater our economy is. If that was the case, we would have been leading the country and booming for decades. The reality of it is we're providing what is a fair compensation package, and we're going to continue to do that. At the same time, making sure we make these strategic investments in the province. Pre-primary is going to be rolled out 100% next year. It means every four-year-old is going to have access to a play-based, evidence-based pre-primary program, regardless of the socioeconomic stances they're born into today. $85 million was provided to low-income Nova Scotians. $85 million when we made the adjustment in basic personal exemption. And yes, we provided labor unions and labor workers in this province with what we believe is an affordable wage increase. No one was rolled back. Everyone was provided an affordable wage increase. And I look forward to Mr. Wozni dealing with the issue that is facing the Nova Scotia Teachers Union today, and that is the unfunded liability of his pension plan.
We are just about out of time. I understand that obviously this piece of legislation will go through this afternoon. Any sense as to when the business of the House will be finished and you'll be rising for the fall?
No, not yet. That'll be determined on how much goes through. There's a number of pieces of legislation that are still there. Yesterday, the new Environmental Goals and Sustainability Act was introduced with some aggressive and positive things for the economy, for the environment and the economy, and that'll be continue to be debated. And I think there's a number of other pieces still there.
And one other point of business, clearly Lenore Zan is not returning to the Nova Scotia Legislature. Any sense as to when you may be in a position to call for a by-election for that riding?
Yeah, no, I haven't. I haven't put my mind to that yet, but we will soon.
All right, Premier Stephen McNeil, you've been generous with your time. Thank you so much.
All the best. Thanks very much.
You take care. It's Premier Stephen McNeil with us on the program. And producer Matt, someone did call in and wanted to know about his salary, wanted to know about his pay, how he fits on that list. He's saying this is, you know, being torqued. That's in some ways what, you know, happens in the legislature. That's what politics are, isn't it? I think. I don't know why that audio wouldn't play. That's disappointing.
Me either. That was going to sound awesome.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Well, that's all right. Well, he didn't yell at me. That's good. We'll take a break.
You may have if you heard the audio.
I think so. We'll be back in just a few seconds to talk a little bit about stadiums, the fact that 11, well, there was one conservative elected in Nova Scotia, but with the other members of parliament all in the Liberal Party, now perhaps want to support a stadium that may or may not happen in Halifax. We'll talk a little bit about that. Moshe Lander right after this. On a Friday in October, late October, decent enough weather, and things are heating up in the Legislative Assembly. The initial plan was they would sit until around 1 o'clock this afternoon. That's not the case. The legislators are still hard at work this afternoon. In fact, the piece of legislation we were talking about, and the NDP earlier in the week were saying, withdraw this bill, get rid of this thing, and end it. Well, it's not going to happen. It looks like Bill 203 will move through the House this afternoon through the, because of the majority government of Stephen McNeil. The NDP's Gary Burrell may be able to join us this afternoon, depending on what happens in the House. That would be at about 2:15. That's the plan. Have you tried again there, Matt? Is Yeah, I just restarted the phones in here to see if perhaps that would change things, and it didn't. So, nothing. Oh, it should work. If that worked, that should work. Yes? Mine seemed to work. We'll try it again here. See if we can't get our guest on the program this afternoon. There's a story up at Halifax Today. If you haven't yet had a chance to head on over, maybe you could. It's no one should be flooded with optimism about future of CFL Stadium. That was what the mayor had to say. I know he was on with Rick Howe earlier this morning. And we were able to reach out to Anthony LeBlanc. And there are stories that we'll be running throughout the afternoon about his take, his thoughts, saying he's a bit surprised about the negative reaction to the proposal that is now being considered by staff at a Halifax regional municipality. We talked a little bit about what that cost of the report would be. We were told it could be as much as $10,000 to $15,000. The argument being, well, you know what, we want to be seen to be open for business. I think we heard that a couple of times, open for business. And that it would look wrong, or it would appear to be perhaps disingenuous if we, well, stop the thing mid process. Is Moja there?
I am.
Oh, good. The phones are working. Moja Lander is on the line with us this afternoon. Thank you for doing this. Sorry about the delay in getting
no
to
worries.
You. Are you in Halifax right now?
I am. I'm at Dow.
Well, thank you very much for being a part of the show. A lot of talk about, again, this whole stadium issue in Halifax. There was a move to try and bring back and rescind a motion from a year ago saying that staff would look into this. That failed. So now I guess we're moving forward with the plan. Moja, do you think there's any chance that the federal government, after the federal election this week, might be interested now that there's a minority?
I hope not. I mean, what better way to just inflame the tension that already exists in this minority government than giving money to Atlantic Canada Stadium Development? And, you know, when the Liberals have no representation in Western Canada, I don't know that you want to sit there and start upsetting people by first act handing over tens of millions of dollars to a stadium in Halifax.
We've been talking a bit about this Schooner Sports and Entertainment bid and some suggestion that, you know, if they don't get an answer by the first of the new year, that they might just, you know, take their ball and go home. In fact, a quote from Anthony LeBlanc, we're kind of flummoxed why this is being met with the opposition it is. Does it surprise you that he's surprised?
No. He seems the most disconnected of anybody with what's going on with the plan here. Of course he should be not surprised by what's going on. The fact is that there's no economic return on public funds being used for stadium development. So, you know, the fact that the city council wants to take a closer look at the proposal and look at it in more detail rather than just signing a blank check is indicative that they realize that if they sign that check, yeah, there'll be a stadium and yeah, there'll be a CFL team, but no, there's not going to be any sort of economic reward for that. So I think him saying that he's surprised is merely for public consumption, not because he's actually sitting there in the boardroom going, I wonder what's going on.
Another quote, if you think the CFL is going to be successful, the risk to HRM is literally $0.
No. So the idea right now that somehow the city would be responsible for owning the stadium and that Schooners Entertainment would merely be providing the maintenance and operating costs, in fact, put all of the risk on city council. What happens if what people are saying turns out to be correct, that, you know what, there's not support for CFL in Halifax? Or what happens if the team shows up and for the first 3 years puts up a clunker of a team and fans lose interest? If the Schooners decide that they want to get out of here and go to Moncton or just hand back the keys to the franchise and say, we're done, that stadium still exists and somebody has to pay for its operating costs, maintenance costs, and all of the payback on the construction costs. And that falls all on HRM. So they're hugely exposed and really invested in this project. So it's not a zero-risk exercise. The zero risk falls on Schooners.
He is an economics professor at Concordia and this afternoon at Dalhousie. His name is Moja Lander, and we're talking about the stadium proposal and whether or not there could be any federal dollars available. You say that's pretty much, it should be off the table if it's not already.
Yeah, I mean, again, if that's just a talking point to try and kind of garner interest or to try and sway some dissuaded people in City Hall, you know, fine. But I can't imagine why the federal government would want to do that. And beyond that, think of the precedent that it sets, that if you start having the federal government putting money into stadium development, the Flames have a new arena coming in the next 5 years in Calgary. The Bell Centre in Montreal is nearing the end of its shelf life. Montreal wants to build a baseball stadium. At this point, if we just open the door that the federal government is now going to get into the business of sports. And the fact is that I don't think they want to set that precedent, and I don't think they want that responsibility going forward. So don't make this the case study. Mm.
Well, what's on the agenda for class this afternoon, Moshe?
Well, you know what? I was actually invited out to talk about stadium financing.
Oh,
so, we've got a nice little hour and a half round table here with a bunch of the well and good of Dalhousie, and they're going to listen to me windbag for a little bit of time about why this is a bad idea. And you and your listeners got a nice little sneak peek of what I'm going to talk about for the next 90 minutes.
So we got the preview and the highlights, and clearly I still owe you a beer, so we'll figure that out at some point.
You got me till Monday, so
all right.
If not then, we'll settle up in the summer.
Moshe Lander, all the best. Thank you so much for being available.
My pleasure, anytime.
Take care. Joining us this afternoon from Halifax, where he's about to appear at Dalhousie University. Appear? That's one way to put it. Producer Matt, you all right? Everything good? Everything's all good in your world?
Yeah, you know, I'm okay.
Yeah, it's Friday.
A little stressed out, actually.
Why?
Just
the phones weren't working.
Not everything's exactly working as it should.
Yeah.
The most important thing is that we have our guests getting on the line.
Oh, so yeah, that was brilliant, because the phone works now. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, it's working. All right, what's after one? Oh, he's in studio. Mm-hmm. We don't even have to worry about the phone. Now I have a button.
You're kind of playing it like a beat.
We got the beat. Ryan Cook and Sonny Akers, he's got the beat. You know, he was kind of country before country was cool. Wasn't that a country song?
Country's been around a long time.
Well, that's true, too. Ryan Cook and Sonny Akers, a tribute to Buck Owens and the Bakersfield Sound. I like that. We're going to talk to Ryan. I don't think all of the rest of Sonny Akers are in with him, but Ryan's here, right?
Never know.
Well, we'll find out. Ryan Cook, he's our guest after this. We'll be right back after this news update from Sky.